My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the Texans are done with practices in Ohio. Three of them, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They're off today.
Traveling to Pittsburgh.
It's only an hour and a half trip, apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Cleveland and Pittsburgh were that close.
Yeah.
That is a heated rivalry, I guess.
Big time, man.
I mean, I knew it was a heated rivalry. I just didn't realize that geographically it was that intense.
Yeah, it's damn near a border skirmish. they're very close to each other there.
Over the whiskey tax, the pernicious whiskey taxes they used to charge back in the day.
And the big thing standing in between them is Youngstown, which I don't want to mess with anybody from Youngstown.
You watch out for Youngstown.
Yes.
Well, that's where, isn't that where Frank Ross is from? Or
yes.
He went to Youngstown State?
No, yeah. He went to John Carroll like the rest of them.
Oh, that's right. He went to John Carroll. Yeah. But he's from Youngstown.
Man, that's a tough town. The DeBartolos are from there, man. It's rough in Youngstown. Let's go out to the hotline right now. Somebody who had eyes on all three Texans practices. Someone who you can hear on sideline duties tomorrow night for the Houston. Actually, no, not tomorrow night. Johnny Harris joining us right now, founder of footballtakeover.com as well. Johnny, I don't want to speak out of turn. Is tomorrow not a sideline night for you? Is tomorrow a TV night for you?
Tomorrow is a TV night. I will be up in the booth with Indy Clue and Kevin Kugler, so I am looking forward to that. And there might be a little bit of rain, so I get to avoid the rain, so that'll be kind of nice. But I love going to Pittsburgh. You know, last time we were in Pittsburgh, it was 2020, so it was the COVID year. So they basically drove us to the hotel, drove us to the stadium, then drove us to the airport. Didn't get to go out and do anything, so I'm looking forward to getting there to Pittsburgh. Yeah, I'll be up in the booth with Indy and Kevin tomorrow night. That'll be kind of fun.
So, John, reading some of the reports of practice yesterday, it sounds like John Metchie's got an issue with drops this training camp that continued into yesterday's practice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that. I mean, some DBs have made some nice plays against John, but, you know, he made a nice catch in 7-on-7, I think, right? I think it may have been the last play of 7-on-7. And you just never know how one play can kind of flip it for a guy. He makes a great play, and then all of a sudden the confidence is there. He makes another great play in a game, and now it starts to roll a little bit. And I kind of felt like that was something that maybe he's lacking lately, because there have been some other receivers that step up and make some plays, and we're like, okay, you know, Jonathan, you got to make a couple plays too. And, you know, maybe he's pressing a little bit, and you can kind of see him getting down on himself. So, you know, there's been some struggles with that, but I'd love seeing him make that catch at the end for a touchdown. I mean, Tim Boyle rifled one on a slant near the back of the end zone, and John just went up and snatched it. You could tell when it was done. It was the last play of that 7-on-7. And, you know, I could hear teammates like, yeah, good bleep, John. Good stuff, John. You're, like, really excited for him. So, you know, maybe that's the kind of thing that gets him going. But, you know, the proof will be tomorrow night in what he does with the time he's going to get. And I don't know how much time all those top receivers are going to get. You know, Stephon did not practice yesterday. You know, Tank and Nico did. I would imagine they'll get a drive. But there are going to be plenty of reps to go around that receiver group. And John's got to make the most of them. And the other night, it was Xavier Hutchinson who made the most of them. And every time X does something, it just kind of amps his, you know, the quality that he brings to the game and the impact he's bringing to this team. So, you know, John's got to match that tomorrow night with, you know, 3-4 catches, make an impact play, and really kind of boost his confidence even more than it's been.
Which position group, Johnny, are you most looking forward to seeing just going against another colored jersey, going against some other team, as opposed to just going against the same guys every day?
It's the defensive front. I don't think we'll see Will. I don't know 100% sure. But you'll see Jerry Hughes, Derek Barnett, and, of course, you'll see Danielle Hunter for a little bit. But to me, the most intriguing group on a team, as my voice cracks, it's still early in the morning, I guess, is the interior defensive line. I think there's been so much talk about, well, they didn't do anything this offseason. They didn't do anything with the interior defensive line. Okay, well, Fadakasi, okay, well, whatever. Tim Settle, okay, like, who's he? But to me, it's been the improvement of guys that were already here. it's been the improvement of Khalil Davis. I mean, Khalil Davis was fantastic last year in that complimentary role to Rankins and Malik. But this year, he's taking over practices. Like, you're like, man, we got to get him out of the game, out of the practice, because we can't get anything done. This guy's just destroying us. Kurt Heinrich, the last week or so, has really kind of taken his game up a little bit. And those are two guys. They were that second group that came in behind Rankins and Collins. And they really did some good things. But I also want to see Fodder Kassi. Mario Edwards has really been difficult to block, whether back in Houston or in Ohio. So I'm really curious to see how that group, going against the Steelers group that will be without Isaac Seumalo, and their starting guard, probably their best interior guy. So I think that's, you know, who cares? You know, I still want to see those guys up front and see how their style going against a different offense, you know, facing Justin Fields, slowing down Najee Harris. I want to see what that interior does. I'm really excited to see it. I don't know that that group, the D-line, played exceptionally well in the Hall of Fame game, but you didn't see Fodder Kassi. We didn't see Mario Edwards. You know, obviously we didn't see Danielle Hunter either. So hopefully we'll have a chance to see those guys a little bit and see maybe what this is going to start looking like as we move forward towards the Colts in week one.
You know, John, you know, it's interesting. The Steelers are playing because Cam Sutton is out. They've got Beanie Wells there playing their slot corner. And the Texans have a new guy playing their nickelback in Jalen Petrie. And I feel like they're just you're going to see a couple of guys going up against starters for the first time in that role. But I feel like Beanie for the Steelers is, he's a cornerback. So like, you might feel more comfortable in some of the coverage side of things, but not necessarily against the run. Where are you with Jalen Petrie? Because with him, I feel like, yes, when he's the nickel linebacker, cool. If he's like on the line as the slot corner, that's not what I want. Are we going to see like a platooning with him most likely?
No, I don't think so, Seth. I think what's interesting about the nickel position or the star is that player is so different. You had 32 different teams are going to have 32 different nickels, and some of them, like, you know, Mike Hilton, you know, with the Bengals, you know, he's a guy kind of like Jalen. Like, he gets close to the line of scrimmage, he blitzes a lot, you know, he plays the run, he's really quick, and he can slip blocks. He's only like 5'8", 5'9", you know, and about 180, but he's really good at those things, blitzing, creating mayhem. And then he can match up a slot receiver okay. It's not great, but it's okay. They don't like leaving him in man coverage. You know, Jalen's a lot like that, but he's just bigger. You know, the closer that Jalen is to the line of scrimmage, I think the more disruptive he's going to be. The thing about it, Seth, from the perspective of preseason games, is I don't know you'll see a lot from Jalen Petrie. I just think you're going to see him in pretty basic, you know, if they do go nickel, I think you'll see him in pretty basic stuff. You know, might be zone, they might man up a little bit. But I don't think they're going to show a whole lot of what Jalen actually is going to do during the year, because I think Jalen's going to blitz a decent portion. I think he's going to move around. I think he's going to blitz into different gaps. I think he's going to play the run maybe a little differently. So I think you'll see a little bit more conservative approach in the preseason. I'm curious to see how it fits, but I think it's more like what he did when he was at Baylor. Now, I'm with you. I don't know that I love seeing Jalen in a one-on-one, man-to-man situation. But if you can get to a point where you get a team to third down and it's a sure passing down, well, maybe there's some things you can do. Maybe that nickel ends up being more of a corner guy, maybe a third cover guy. Maybe you end up, you know, C.J. Henderson, hey, we want a true corner covering. Jalen, you go back and play safety. We'll put a third corner in the game because we feel better with the three corners matching up with the three wide receivers we'll see on third and whatever the passing situation might be. But I know in the preseason, you're not going to see much from Jalen Petrie. I just want to see him tackle well. His fundamentals have to be on point. But once the season starts, that's when I think you'll start to see Jalen Petrie kind of open up, because that's when the scheme opens up, and that's when you see a little bit more from D'Amico Ryan's defensive package.
John Harris joining us. He's been at the practices the last 3 days for the Texans in Ohio, Texans and the Steelers. Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock kickoff here on Sports Radio 610. Johnny, we were talking yesterday about the rookie class, and I feel like the top four guys in this rookie class are all making the team and all look like guys who are going to contribute in some fashion to this team this year. You know, Lazarus, Fisher, Bullock, and Stover. And then you got the guys selected after that it feels like are all fighting for their lives for this 53-man roster, which is kind of new territory for the Texans, where every year for the last few years felt like, well, the draft picks are all making the team because there's no depth. of the guys that are kind of battling right now, those sixth and seventh rounders, which one are you most looking forward to watching tomorrow night?
Well, I go back to the defensive interior. Marcus Harris, he's not a guy that looks like any of the other guys. I mean, he's shorter. He's probably less. He's probably shorter than 6'2". He's 280, but he's thick like a truck, and he's really quick off the ball. So it's not – the Texans haven't had a lot of guys like him. And, in fact, there are just not a lot of guys like him in the NFL. You don't find 6'1 and a half, 6'2", 280 playing in the NFL. The ones that did or have been Aaron Donald. They've been Ed Oliver. They've been those kind of players. They're special. They've had to be at that size. But Marcus Harris is really intriguing because his get-off is excellent. He's so quick off the ball. But he's also really strong and stout. And being a little bit shorter, he's a leverage winner. So at that interior position, they don't really have a guy like him. I mean, you know, Heinisch and Khalil, you know, Khalil's probably the closest they get, but Khalil's 305. So I don't know how that's going to fit. But I just feel like he can create some mayhem just getting upfield and penetrating, that he really fits the defense. He's just smaller than he's not smaller because he's pretty thick. He's lighter than a lot of guys that they've had. So I'm excited to see what he does. He had a rep. It was on Tuesday, and it was the slippery field, if you will. But he had a bull rush against Kendrick Green, and Kendrick knew, okay, I'm going against a shorter guy. I got to get down. So he's trying to get his pad level down, and Marcus just bull rushed him, and Kendrick's feet just slid right out from under him, and he basically face planted. But that's because Marcus Harris can play at that particular level, that pad level. And I think he could be very disruptive. I think the guy that's got to make some plays is Jamal Hill. He's got to make it. I mean, the linebackers, you're already limited because you're probably only playing two most of the time anyways. So that linebacker group, Jamal Hill's got to crack into it. And it's going to be tough if Jake Hansen's ready to play. DeMeco talked a lot about what he sees from Jake Hansen, really likes him. You got some versatility with some of those other guys. You know, Neville Hewitt's probably going to make it because of what he does on special teams. Mm-hmm. Jamal Hill can run, but he's got to start making the right moves in coverage, which he didn't the other night. And that's something that's got to change. And if he's going to make this team, that's where it's really got to start coming into fruition for him at that position. But I'm really intrigued about Marcus Harris to see what he does against the Steelers.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna slip Marcus Harris some forbidden pictures of Jerry Ball. I have a dream of turning a 6'1" dude into a 340-pound run stuffing machine. The thing about guys like Jerry Ball, for the kids, Jerry Ball was 6'1", listed at like 340, but bigger than that, and an absolute machine. You have to be incredibly athletic to be able to carry that much body weight, and I think Marcus Harris can pull it off.
Yeah. It's not even his real name. They just called him that because he looked like a ball.
He was an immovable rock is what he was.
Man.
Yeah, but Jerry Ball was a fullback in high school.
Right.
If I remember correctly, he went to Beaumont Westbrook, and he was a fullback.
Yeah, most of those guys.
He's massive.
Right, Keith Traylor also was like super, like a track runner when he was. Those guys that to be able to carry 350 plus pounds, you have to be an incredibly, like, you have to be fast enough that by the time you're slowed down, you're still kind of fast. Yeah. So
I mean, what am I saying? Vita Vea was a tailback in high school.
Oh my god,
he was 350. So he can be done. Yeah, he's not fat. He's big boned, as they say.
Okay, so tell me this. This is where I'm trying. I wish the Steelers weren't in the AFC because there's a part of me that is just fascinated by the Justin Fields pairing up with Arthur Smith and also potentially Brandon Ayuk and George Pickens. That, like, what are my chances that Justin Fields actually ends up being a different version of himself this year?
0%. He's going to be the same guy. He's going to be the same guy. I mean, they might. It's just he's not. He's not a consistent, accomplished thrower. I should say it that way. He's a thrower, not a passer. And once he becomes a passer, it'll be very dangerous. But, I mean, George Pickens is going to lose his bleep when Justin Fields sails three balls over him against the Browns.
Tomlin said that that Justin Fields' footwork is much improved. He doesn't have the happy feet in the pocket and everything. He's one of these guys, like kind of Josh Allen would have been in college, where he's just got such crazy arm talent that he's never had to learn the actual right mechanics. So if you could just, if maybe getting kicked in the butt and a blow to the pride a little bit of being traded does that for him to motivate him, maybe that'll be the thing.
Okay, I'm gonna ask this in all seriousness because I'm kind of thinking myself. think about a quarterback that came from college that had kind of had bad mechanics, but, you know, good athlete, but bad mechanics. That eventually
Josh Allen and Dak Prescott are the guys that, like, actually improved their footwork and stuff, not, like, bad mechanics.
I would say those are the two. I would say those are the two. And the thing is, the answer to that question is those two, and that goes to show you how often it doesn't happen. That you that guys just don't improve, though it's so ingrained in them to throw a particular way that it's really, really hard to break all that down. I would say Jalen Hurts probably improved. Jalen Hurts improved in college and he got a little bit better as he moved into the league, but it's so rare.
Yeah.
And you got to have the right mindset, and hopefully Justin Fields got a kick in the backside. So I'm encouraged to see and excited to see him. You know, I don't want to see him play well, but I know when I saw him in 20, when we go to Chicago, 22. It was awful.
Yeah.
It was that was ridiculous.
Yeah, he looked like he was on his way out of the league in that, like, that was week 3 of that season, and he looked god awful in that game. Johnny, are you in Pittsburgh yet? What's the travel plan?
No, we're busing today. We leave here probably about 2:30. We've got about a 90 minute to 2 hour bus ride. It's not a bus ride I've taken before, so I don't quite know, but we're getting on the bus, 7 buses or 8 or whatever we got, and then we're going up there, and we'll get up to the hotel, and I finally get to go to a TV production meeting tonight. It's going to be kind of fun. So I get all the inside info. It's going to be awesome. I'm really
looking forward to it. You guys probably stop at a Shoney's along the way.
Yeah,
and stop at a Shoney's.
Yeah.
Maybe D'Amico will take you to McDonald's. if you guys win the game, you can take the bus to McDonald's afterwards.
That'd be big.
Yeah, or a Bob Evans. I mean, Mark and I have eaten at Bob Evans 3 straight days in a row.
Stuckey's?
Like that's Stuckey's.
Yeah.
Bob Evans, Shoney's. We'll definitely hit. I don't know if we'll hit a Wawa. I think that's more a
Eastern.
That's more a Philly thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Eastern Pennsylvania thing. Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to go to Primanti Brothers at some point to get a sandwich. Probably tomorrow. That might be breakfast. I don't know. Who knows? That might be the pregame meal, but. I'm excited. I love Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a really cool city. I think it's totally underrated. So, yeah, we're getting on a bus and taking off in a little bit here.
Good deal. All right. Well, Johnny, we'll let you get back to that. We will talk to you tomorrow in the pregame show. It'll be the next time that we chat with you. Hey, man, appreciate you making time for us all week long and giving us the insight that on the things that we didn't get to see out at training camp. Really appreciate you, man.
Absolutely, boys. Miss you. We'll see you soon.
All right,
Take care.
Yep, we'll talk to you soon. See you back in Houston. We'll talk to you tomorrow during the pregame show, Texans Countdown. John Harris joins us right out of the chute. At tomorrow to be at about 3:15 or so. So tune in for that. He'll be right there on site. And yeah, he's on the TV. He's excited about that. He should be. Him and ND Kalu and Kevin Kugler on the Channel 13 feed tomorrow. So
cool.
Yeah.
So this is on. Is NFL Network showing the, like, are they doing their own broadcast or are they showing Pittsburgh?
It's a good
broadcast?
Question, Seth. I think at this stage they're pulling local feeds from games and the Texans Steelers game is the one that they're advertising on the ribbon that goes, or the ticker that goes across the bottom of the screen. So, yeah, I don't know if the NFL Network is pulling our feed or if they do it, maybe they just do it like from the home team, and that would be Pittsburgh in this case. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll circle back to the Texans, but the Astros had a big night last night. Got the silver boot, retained the silver boot. I think more importantly, yesterday, it seems like there's good news on the injury front for this team. We'll see. Can we believe what we're hearing when it comes to that? We'll dig back into what happened with the Astros yesterday, and we'll do that coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to LinkedIn.com/results to claim your credit. That's LinkedIn.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
That little pop-up. Who's going to get it? Altuve is there, and the Astros win the series and hold on to the silver boot for an 8th consecutive season, taking the season series from the Rangers. The Astros winning the final 2 games, winning 6-4 today. That was a nice comeback in that series after a really tough first game loss.
A lot of good yesterday. Okay, let's go. The good. Silver boot is ours still, 8 straight years. Suck on that, Texas.
Yeah.
Go cry in the corner with your World Series trophy.
Well, yeah, and by Texas, you mean...
Oh, sorry, Arlington. Yeah, the Rangers. There, which, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't,
yeah.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean
we're,
all of you listening.
Yeah, we're part of Texas there.
That's so. Right. I forgot.
I know you're not a geography major.
Not at all. I do know where Youngstown is. So Silver Boot is ours. Astros back in first place. They were out of first place for a bit there, for a minute.
Yeah.
But they're a half game up on the Mariners, who continue to lose. Kikuchi solid yesterday. That was
Kikuchi,
big.
Kikuchi ka solid.
Yep.
Yes. Kikuchi was kosher.
Kosher
Kikuchi.
He wasn't.
With how many Ks?
He had
nine Ks?
Eight Ks yesterday. Yeah.
AK Kikuchi, that's what I call him.
That's it.
Okay, instead of AK-47, he's AK Kikuchi.
He's AK Kikuchi.
AK Kikuchi was kosher on up there. Good job. Good job, Kikuchi.
Yep.
We're look, Yordan seems to have had something click back into place for him.
Yes.
That was they didn't throw to him really the first at bat, and then he just went ahead and crushed one. Was that one off urethra, or was that
I think it was off urethra.
Off urethra. It was a rough night for urethra. Urethras tend to have a hard time in Dallas.
That is true.
There's a lot of chlamydia.
A lot of burning going on. Yeah, that was a burning long drive.
When your last name is urethra, don't expect to be doing good on a mound.
Right.
In Dallas.
No. Yeah. Here's what it sounded like. Yordan's 117 miles an hour off the bat. Here's what it sounded like on the broadcast.
And one of the fastest all time in Major League history. There's a ball shot into right center field. That's got a chance. That's a bullet home run into the bullpen.
Oh, man. So much hate behind that swing.
Nobody picks him, and he throws us why. Yeah, he should have been the first round pick. Yordan, number 151 in his career, a night after he had number 150.
Okay, there you go. See, that was funny, Blum, there. A lot of hate behind that swing right there.
Well,
but that's how you could tell, though, Seth, the Callis's call right there. Normally on a home run, especially a Yordan home run, like high drive, deep right field. That one, he starts in with line drive to right center, you know? It looked like a gapper.
You know what, too? I don't think you would have, like, if that were a home game, I don't think you would have been able to judge by the fan reaction or the center fielder or anything. It just you know, the annoying thing is when on the TV broadcast, everybody's cheering when it's an obvious, the outfielder's my 20 ball. Feet in front of the wall waiting for the ball. That one, it was really hard to judge on television what the hell was going to happen to that thing.
It was.
I think Yordan's probably always been so good at baseball that at no point did some coach be like, you know, worry that he's not angry enough or something.
Right.
You know, like I know Blum, it was funny he was saying there's a lot of anger behind that, but there's just, I don't know if I've ever seen an angry look out of him.
No.
The entire time I've been watching him.
Yeah.
So if you're a football player, some coach would have been like, you gotta, listen, son, you gotta want it a little bit more. He's like, I'm a baseball player. I'm just gonna crush the ball really, really far.
Yeah, man. The number that Callis was talking about coming into that cut we just played, about talking about Yordan being one of the fastest to such and such, he hit his 150th home run two nights ago, and he got to 150 home runs, eighth fastest in the history of baseball. Like, we're watching, if he can stay healthy, we're watching a future Hall of Famer in Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And there's some big names, some of whom kind of faded out. You know, like Ryan Howard was a multi-time MVP and just didn't sustain it for as long as the Phillies would have liked him to. Pete Alonso is off to a great start. I bring those guys up because they're the two fastest to 150. It took Yordan 590 games to get to 150 home runs. For some perspective, that's right there with Albert Pujols and Mark McGwire, who are at 586 and 588. And probably the most impressive thing is that the next closest Astro is 133 games behind Yordan Alvarez. It's George Springer. George Springer got to 150 home runs in 723 games. Yordan got to 150 home. And we remember how great Springer was as a power hitter early on in his career. Yordan got to it 133, like almost a full season faster, you know, to 150 home runs.
He's gaining a little bit of ground on Pete Alonso then, because Pete Alonso got his 150 runs last year. Right now, Pete Alonso was the second fastest ever to 100 home runs whereas Yordan was like sixth or seventh fastest to 100 home runs.
Yep. Yeah, Alonso number two for 150 as well. 538 games to get
to. Oh, so he's not gaining any ground on him. Damn it.
Yep.
He's losing ground, Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Fernando Tatis, we'll see how that fares over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can't make your little trips down to the border as much for whatever the hell you were. Yeah.
Good call. Good call. Yeah. The other good thing, a lot of good things from yesterday's game, man, and it felt good because this has been a rough patch, a small rough patch here for the Astros. Zach DiCenzo got his first hit, his first two hits. He's 2-for-7 now as a big leaguer. He looked didn't look overmatched yesterday like he did in the first go-round against the Rangers. Here was Joe Espada on Zach DiCenzo getting his first major league hit.
You know what? It was like day two. He got put, day one behind him. He looked like he just kind of belonged out there. He really looked very confident. He played really good defense. His at bats were solid, man. He hit some balls hard. He threw some good hacks. He was aggressive. He was confident. I like it a lot.
Made a really nice play at first base.
Yep.
So his mom did a good job getting interviewed while he was pitching. I don't know why they do it while the guy is pitching. It never makes any sense to me.
Or hitting, you mean?
They were doing it while he was actually out there pitching.
Zach DiCenzo?
Dang it. All right, I got to shut the show down. Yep. While he was out there hitting. Thank you.
Yes,
while he was out there hitting. They were interviewing Zach DiCenzo's mom about Kikuchi.
I was getting nervous.
And she kept calling him the wrong name.
You had that about to get angry look. I'm like, no, he's really not a pitcher.
No, yeah, you're exactly right. I'm angry at myself is what I am. That's it's been a rough morning.
Yeah,
damn it.
Let him.
Ever since I've lost my voice flipping out about the mistreatment of Josh Allen.
You got it back. You sound fine. I'm guessing at the very least we've got a platoon situation at first base now where, DiCenzo gets to go against the lefties and Singleton gets to go against the righties, that kind of thing. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Other than Altuve, Bregman, Yordan, Peña, who's not a great hitter, but he's your starting shortstop. Like every other position on this team, DH, I think they could do some things at catcher. Yiner certainly deserves to be out there in the lineup every day. I think just watching yesterday, Seth, if they're trying to get maximum pop in this lineup for as long as they can, I think you've got to look at doing a situation where you've got Yordan in left field, Yiner DHing, and Victor Caratini at catcher a little bit more than you normally would, you're almost splitting catcher position.
I mean, Caratini with the home run yesterday and doing very well at the plate as a batter all year long.
Yep.
Yeah. That's not the drain of sending Abreu out there or something was.
No.
So the whole Yordan playing left field, and yes, he plays better when he's in left field, but the whole thing is you got to keep him healthy and fresh for the whole season.
Yeah.
I just get nervous about that.
I do too.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. No, it's like these are the things that happen with teams that are not built perfectly. And the Astros aren't, they're not built perfectly anymore. And maybe when Kyle Tucker comes back, you can ease off of that a little bit because you got one more big bat in the lineup, you know?
Oh, yeah. You didn't go over the good news about Kyle Tucker.
Let's do that as well. Well, yeah, okay. Kyle Tucker. So Dana Brown was on the he was on 790 yesterday. He was on the flagship. Okay, I'm going to read the quote from Dana Brown, Seth, and I'm going to put it through the Seth Payne truth filter here, and you tell me if you're buying or selling on what Dana Brown said yesterday about Kyle Tucker. Quote, "We should get him back sometime this month. He's pretty much pain-free and making great progress. He had good activity yesterday in Houston. There's a chance he could be back in the big leagues this month. We need him bad," end quote. I agree with that last part. They do need him bad. I don't think he's lying there.
It's either next month or the last month of the season or this month.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll believe him then, I guess, because he basically said next month or this month. That was a turd sandwich disguised as a nice Arby's roast beef.
Well,
that was maybe next month, but also maybe this month. Yeah.
Well, there is a chance that it's none of the above. You know what I mean? Like, 2 days ago, you and I were talking here on this show about how nervous we were that he might not be coming back at all just because of everything that we've been hearing about Kyle Tucker and just how dodgy they've been about everything or flat-out dishonest they've been at times about some of this stuff.
Read the very first part of the quote again.
I'll read it again. Yeah, yeah. Quote, "We should get him back sometime this month. He's pretty much pain-free and making great progress. He had good activity yesterday in Houston. There's a chance he could be back in the big leagues this month. We need
Okay, he said this month both times.
Both times.
I'm sorry, I heard next month. Okay.
Yeah, that makes he said sense. This month
All right.
both times. Yeah, but
okay, I'll take it back then a little bit. I thought I heard next month, so okay. No, then I definitely don't buy it.
Right, right. Because he goes in the very same quote, Dana Brown starts off by saying, we should get him back sometime this month, which to me, when you say should, means it's a favorite. That's the favorite. And then he says there's a chance he could be back in the big leagues this month, two sentences later.
Which, I don't like the way he says in the big leagues. Yeah. Like, it's almost just like it's this kid's dream.
Yeah. I like it better than when Lance McCullers calls it the show. Oh, no, Cody Bellinger. Sorry, how did I confuse Lance McCullers with Cody Bellinger? My God. When Cody Bellinger calls it the show. I hate when current big league players call it the show.
Well, and he does it in that Cody Bellinger nerdy stoner voice somehow. You're like, well, it's just, everybody knows he disrespected everybody in the show.
Text message here. This goes back to the segment we did with Joe Fortenbaugh audio from ESPN, where he talked about all the things that could go wrong for the Texans this year, all the regression to the mean with turnovers and with one score games. Texter says, great last segment, guys. Do you attribute the teams that win more one score games than lose? What do you attribute to the teams that consistently win more one score games than lose besides luck? Is it just good coaching?
It's, well, the whole thing about it is that it's almost always just more random chance. But there are, like, so it's hard to figure out exactly when it was just something that, you know, is special about the team. Bill O'Brien was actually really good in one-score games. I think part of it was his second-half strategy when they had a lead. It might have been infuriating and scary as hell, but he was batting damn near 1,000 when they had a lead going into the second half.
Yeah. There was a point where he was like 24-1 in games that they led at the half. It was crazy.
Like, it got to the point where even the stat nerds were like, okay, yeah, there's something to this.
Yeah.
So it's usually on any given year, it all kind of balances out over time. I think that, I don't know if this was the same texter that had said this or not, Sean. Somebody had said that maybe the team with a better quarterback has a better chance of winning a one score game. That I guess that would stand to reason. But if that quarterback also has a crappy defense, he might be just as likely to lose that game.
Well, I would submit that Bill O'Brien compiled that record of being really good in games he led at the half without any before Deshaun Watson without any good quarterbacks.
Right.
He did it literally in seasons. Every season, the first 3 years, he benched his starter at some point during the season, and he was doing it with those guys.
There's always a question, too, of like, okay, yeah, you're good at one-score games, but like, how many games could have actually been very comfortable victories?
If you were a better coach,
you allowed to become one-score games.
Yes, no, I think there's something to that, for sure.
Every one-score game tells a story. That's how I like to say it.
Yes,
every one-score game tells a story.
Indeed. Jim Harbaugh got thumped by the NCAA yesterday.
Does it even
matter? Is there a chance the NFL makes it matter to Jim Harbaugh? We will discuss that coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Thing I do where I get angry and tell people to go die.
Yeah.
It's fun. That's fun locally because people know me and they know for the most part I'm not attaching a deadline to when I want them to go die or anything.
Right.
We were just talking about whether that should become my shtick. Is really hoping for really nasty, violent deaths. Not advocating it or trying to incite it. But
forcing
just
the issue. Yeah.
Telling very famous people to go die.
Right.
As publicly as possible. That'll be my little gimmick.
Is
that the guy who wishes death upon
you? Right.
He doesn't even wish it. He instructs them to go die.
Die, everybody.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that hotkey just nails it right there. That's where you're making the decision, Seth. Do I want popularity or do I want notoriety? That's the balancing act. Because
eventually the public would learn to grasp it, and they'd be like, oh, he doesn't mean it literally, as far as we know, and he's just a grumpy old man. I'm old enough now that I think I can kind of be like the new Ed Rooney, except more violent, you know? More physically intimidating, a bigger schlong.
So there'll come a day where people will go, they mention Seth Payne, and somebody goes, is that the go die guy? And they go, yeah. They go, I like that guy. I really like that guy.
Wait, was it Ed Rooney? Who's the guy on 60 Minutes?
Andy Rooney.
Andy Rooney.
Ed Rooney was the principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Then there's Art Rooney, who was hung like DiMaggio. No competing with him.
And a degenerate gambler as well, from what I hear.
He wasn't a degenerate gambler. He was a bookie.
Oh, okay. Well,
he took advantage of the degenerate gamblers.
He did.
Both the Maras and the Roonies were both bookies, professional. Like back then, it was legal in New York, I guess. Because I think what
you telling me that worm John Mara comes from a long line of bookies.
Unless, was there another founding family with the... Yeah, it was the Maras.
I'm just a little incredulous based on the Mara that I saw in Hard Knocks moping his way down the hall that he didn't get to keep his little toy, Saquon Barkley.
They were
like a baby. Yeah, yeah.
I know, he definitely, if they'd stayed in the bookie business in New York,
yeah.
John Mara would have just, that place would have been taken over by the mob so fast.
Well, here to break your knees, I guess. So, oh no. Where's Saquon? Maybe I'll get Saquon to break your knees.
He'd be the only bookie. He'd be the bookie that goes and cries to the clients about the bets he lost.
Yeah.
I really wanted the Giants to win. I just don't know. And you think about that. Like, a couple of the founding members of the NFL were, as much as people wring their hands over the potential connection with gambling, a couple of the founding fathers were actual bookmakers.
Different time and place, to be sure. Absolutely. So the NCAA yesterday dropped the hammer on Jim Harbaugh. And I was reading this thing, and I'm expecting them to talk about this notice of allegations that's coming out here soon about the sign stealing and Harbaugh not cooperating. And I completely forgot that Jim Harbaugh had a whole nother set of peccadilloes going on with the NCAA with all of his illegal recruiting that was happening during COVID back in the day.
Right. Yeah, that's where I was like, I didn't want to, make too much of a distinction because I didn't keep up with all the details of the case. But for the most part, the sign stealing was a Big Ten violation. Yeah. He didn't violate an NCAA rule.
Yep.
But it's at Harbaugh. He's pushed the envelope in a lot of different places in a lot of different ways. And it felt like those last couple of years where he flirted hardcore with the NFL, like maybe he felt like the walls were closing in a little bit.
Yeah.
Timed it perfectly.
He did.
He timed it just right. It was like he pulled off the big heist, and just jumped on the wheel of the plane as it was leaving the runway to make it to Argentina. But it was like just by the skin of his teeth.
Well, and because he won a national championship, I would submit that in your analogy there, Seth, it's like he pulled off a heist and his family is the one that now has to serve the jail term. They're the ones that are, his family is left behind and they're the ones paying the price. And his family being Michigan fans, the Michigan program, Sharon Moore, the head coach. And I'll be honest, I bet if you pulled Michigan fans, they don't even care because he got them their national championship. They don't even care. They're like, you know what? That's the price of doing business with Jim Harbaugh is we're going to have to deal with some NCAA sanctions here. And just to get specific with what they did to Harbaugh, the NCAA, they announced a 4-year show cause order for Harbaugh, which means for the next 4 years, if he wants to go back to college for whatever reason, which I don't think is going to happen, but if he were to, that school that hired him would have to go in front of the NCAA to explain why they should be hiring a guy who they will have to suspend for his first year at whatever school he goes. Whatever school, whenever the time comes, if Jim Harbaugh wants to go back to college football, he's got to serve a 1-year suspension before he can coach. It's wild.
That'd be an interesting one. That'd be kind of like signing Kevin Durant, right? I mean, when they knew he wasn't going to play for a year.
Yeah.
Like, when the talent is enough, then teams will be willing to do it. That's what I thought of when who would want to do that? Man, a lot of teams, I think, would take on for a year and with an interim coach appointed by Harbaugh. My biggest worry would be that Harbaugh would break the rules while he was on that suspension.
Idle time.
Yeah,
idle hands.
That he's going to be hooked up via Zoom to every meeting room in there and everything.
Yeah.
Like, I would be terrified that I'd be ready for him to sit out a year, but then he might have to sit out two after violating the rules of his suspension.
That's funny. That's a great analogy, Seth, because I think Harbaugh is at that level of collegiate head coach. Like, he's at a Durant
level.
He's the
Kevin Durant of college head football coaches.
Kevin Durant, perennial, three or four player. He's a top three. Yeah. When he's in college, he's a top three college coach.
Harbaugh won his championship on his own, though, too.
Yeah.
So he did it. He didn't just glom on.
That's
not like
true.
He jumped in. It's not like he just went ahead and, just jumped onto a winning team.
He went and became Nick Saban's OC because he wanted a ring.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Here was Harbaugh. Yeah, here was Harbaugh a couple days ago when he was asked about the allegations against him regarding the sign stealing and his lack of cooperation with the investigation.
Yeah, I do have a comment on that. Never lie, never cheat, never steal. I was raised with that lesson. I have raised my family on that lesson. I have preached that lesson to the teams that I've coached. No one's perfect. If you stumble, you apologize, and you make it right. Today, I do not apologize. I did not participate, was not aware, nor complicit in those said allegations. So for me, it's back to work and attacking with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
So that the COVID stuff, the violations were stuff that he totally participated in.
Yes.
Right? So the it's a separate denial.
It's a separate denial, and the school admitted it in this this go round of punishment. Yeah.
So here he's just denying the surveillance stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I just find that audio
That's
entertaining.
I think this is one thing I've noticed in adamant denials. There's just like, you know how in sales you want to get people saying yes, you know, mm-hmm. like because they just get in the habit of saying yes and they're in that mood. We're like, hey, do you like puppies? Yes. Yeah. Do you like lots of money? Yes. Do you like hot women? Yes. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about an extended life insurance policy?
Yes.
So likewise with an adamant denial, you raise images in the viewer, in the listener's mind,
okay,
of a young Jim Harbaugh being told by his parents, never lie, never cheat, never steal. You get feelings of empathy from others when you start making connections to your family and everything, because then people feel like, oh yeah, this is a real human who had a good upbringing and everything, and oh my gosh, no, he would never do this. And it's very effective. You can do it in like 30 seconds. You can sell yourself as a guy that's totally, that you should totally empathize with.
So yeah. You think you did a good job on that one?
I think he did a good job with it, without ever saying anything to the veracity of whether he did or did not do it. I think it was a very good strategic denial.
It's easy.
As opposed to lashing out at, like, you know, you don't want to lash out too much. You want to make it more of a, like, hey, I'm a human being, and this is the kind of human being I am, and I would never do such a thing.
Yeah.
Clutch your pearls. I would actually wear pearls out there, as if they were about to be stolen from me by those evil prosecutors.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah, and media members as well. So, Yeah, I mean, Harbaugh's in kind of an easy spot to do what he did, which is he's not working for a team nor in a league that it feels like is going to punish him. And yet, I'm looking at an article from Ian Rapoport and Tom Pelissero from October 29th, 2023. So right around the time all the sign stealing stuff was really bubbling up. And that's when every year there had been speculation of Harbaugh coming back to the NFL. So in late October of last year, they wrote, the NFL is unlikely to make itself a safe harbor for Harbaugh to escape what would be substantial NCAA discipline, league sources say, raising the strong possibility Harbaugh would need to serve some or all of any possible suspension he could face in college if he returns to the pros. Now, they don't say who their sources are. This is Rapoport and Pelissero talking to somebody speculating that if Harbaugh were to get suspended in college and go to the NFL, that he would have to serve his suspension in some way. So I've seen some people speculating, like, ooh, could he have to serve a one-year suspension and not coach the Chargers this year? Zero chance that happens, I think. I think zero chance.
I'm really surprised I haven't seen Florio go off with this with, like, eight different columns. I'm looking at the top 10 headlines they've had. Now, they get updated pretty frequently, and he doesn't keep, like, the hottest ones up there, but there's nothing. I thought he would have three today written about this, which makes me wonder if they share a common agent or something.
Oh, wow. Ooh, that's a good angle right there.
Just makes me wonder. And I'm not accusing him of anything, but it does make me wonder. Why would Florio not be writing about it? This is right. Oh. This is his wheelhouse.
Are you kidding me?
However, who pried him away from the wheel on this one?
I don't know. He must. Is he okay? Do we know? There's still articles.
Not even He's not even standing in the wheelhouse.
Yeah. There's still articles going up on his website from him, right? Like he's
there are.
He's
I alive. Haven't seen I'm scrolling. I don't even see anything. Oh, there we go. NFL has no comment on potential discipline of Jim Harbaugh. This is at 8:41 p.m. last night. Oh, I bet he's working on an opus
piece?
For this one. Yeah.
An opus.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, man.
Okay. So, all right. I absolve you from any suspicion I had, Florio, that you were being bent by the will of an agent.
So
okay.
We're keeping eyes on Florio's Twitter feed today. Oh, God, I hope he writes about this. I hope he writes about it. All right. The Texans and the Steelers tomorrow, 6 o'clock kickoff here on Sports Radio 610. 3 o'clock Texans countdown. That's me and Seth. And then Clint Sterner and I have you for the postgame show. Matchups that we are most looking forward to, specifically Seth, at this in this Steelers game tomorrow night. We'll have that for you coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.